He's at the Portland Police Bureau Awards from 1 to 3.
Okay. So Commissioner Saltzman has an excused absence from 1 to 3, so we'll go ahead and gavel ourselves back in from our recess. We have two items today, items number 38 and 39, and Carla suggested, or somebody suggested, we read them together.
And do a roll call first.
But first we do the roll call.
Fish?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Saltzman? Adams?
Here.
Item 38, consider the proposal of Lauren Golden, Parametrics, applicant, and Portland Development Commission owner, and the recommendation from the hearings officer for approval of a comprehensive plan map amendment and zoning map amendment for property located at 9204 and 9330 Southeast Herald Street, LU08-153-523, CPZC. Item 39, amend the comprehensive plan map designations and change zoning at 9204 and 9330 Southeast Herald Street at the request of the Portland Development Commission.
Can I just ask you a question, Madam Clerk?
Do you have my cheat sheet?
I'm looking at the TV monitor in front of me. Mm-hmm. It looks like I'm about a foot and a half lower than the mayor, a foot lower than our newest commissioner. Even Randy Leonard seems to have about 6 inches. Mm-hmm. You think it's my chair?
Commissioner, that
I have mine artificially hung.
The what?
I put my chair up.
We actually cut yours down and welded it together.
Well, remember the fateful night when, without asking anyone, you came in and traded out all the chairs and turned off all the lights? This is your doing. Commissioner Fritz and I came back and brought our own. Well, I brought my chair back, and then she found an old one.
I was given the option of, did I want a Commissioner Fish chair or a Mayor Adams chair?
Madam Clerk, do I appear to be slouching in my seat?
Yes.
Or do you think it's a technical matter?
I think you're actually shrinking. All right. We will begin this hearing. First, I'll ask the city attorney to do the normal preamble.
Yes, and I want to apologize, Mayor. The message I got was for me not to forget my notes, not for me not to forget notes for you. So I'm ready.
Good. Well, you're going to have to coach me today then. I don't remember all the ins and outs.
I think you've lost control just generally speaking, Mayor Adams.
Well, yes.
So let me begin with the procedural announcements required for a land use hearing. This is an evidentiary hearing, which means you may submit new evidence to the council in support of your arguments. This evidence may be in any form, such as testimony, letters, petitions, slides, photographs, maps, or drawings. Any photographs, drawings, maps, or other items you show to council during your testimony should be given to the council clerk at the end of your testimony to make sure they become part of the record. This is council consideration of a hearings officer's recommendation on a comprehensive plan map amendment. Testimony concerning the hearings officer's recommendation will be heard as follows. We'll begin with a staff report by BDS staff for approximately 10 minutes. We will then hear from interested persons in the following order. The applicant will go first and have 15 minutes to address council. After the applicant, the council will hear from individuals or organizations who support the applicant's proposal. Each person will have 3 minutes. Next, council will hear from persons or organizations who oppose the applicant's proposal. Again, each person will have 3 minutes. And if there was testimony in opposition to the proposal, the applicant will have an additional 5 minutes to rebut testimony given in opposition to the proposal. At that point, council may close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote on the hearings officer's recommendation. If it is a tentative vote, council will set a future date for adoption of findings and a final vote on the hearings officer's recommendation. If council takes a final vote today, that will conclude the matter before council. Some guidelines for presenting testimony and participating. These are established by zoning code and state law. First, your testimony must be directed to the approval criteria. Any testimony and evidence you present must be directed toward applicable approval criteria for this land use review or other criteria in the city's comprehensive plan or zoning code you believe apply to the decision. BDS staff will identify applicable approval criteria as part of their staff report to council. Two, issues must be raised with specificity. If you fail to raise an issue clearly enough to give council and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue, you will be precluded from appealing to the Land Use Board of Appeals on that issue. And third, the applicant must identify constitutional challenges to conditions of approval. If the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow counsel to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court to challenge the conditions of approval. So I'm done with mine. And
so I have three preliminary questions for the council before we hear from staff and the formal part of the hearing begin. First, do any members of the council wish to declare a conflict of interest on this matter before us? Hearing none, does any member of council have ex parte contacts to declare or information gathered outside of this hearing to disclose? Hearing none, are there any preliminary questions from council regarding this process? If not, let's begin with the staff report.
Good afternoon, Commissioners and Mayor Adams. I'm Matt Wickstrom, the planner assigned to this land use review case. I'm from the Bureau of Development Services. And the applicant requests a comprehensive plan map amendment and zone change to rezone the subject site from R2A, which is residential 2000 with an alternative design density overlay, to EXD, which is central employment with a design overlay. It's important to point out that the comprehensive plan requires that the D overlay always accompany the EX zoning designation. It's also worth mentioning that comprehensive plan map amendments require approval by City Council. The subject site is composed of four tax lots, all under the ownership of PDC. The entire site is about 4.3 acres in size, and the property is bounded by Southeast Herald Street to the north, Southeast 92nd Avenue to the west, I-5 to the east, and multifamily and commercial uses to the south.
I think you meant I-205.
Oh, yes. Thank you. The existing zoning of the site is R2A. Like I said, that's residential 2000 with an alternative design density overlay. And the R2 zone is a low-density multi-dwelling zone, which would allow a maximum of 93 dwelling units to be constructed on this site. The applicant requests to rezone the site to central employment in order to expand the development potential, although no specific development proposal has been presented at this time. The EX zone allows a mix of uses, including residential, commercial, and industrial uses. More intensive development is allowed in the EX zone than the R2 zone. Minimal setbacks are required. A 3-to-1 floor to site area ratio is allowed, and buildings up to 65 feet in height are also allowed. The site's currently developed with uses associated with the Lentz Little League and the Waddles Boys and Girls Club. And here are some photos of the Little League portion of the site from various viewpoints. And here are a couple more photos of the Little League portion of the site. Portland Parks and Recreation received approval in June 2008 to move the Lentz Little League use to an area of Lentz Park. And new facilities will be constructed for the Lentz Little League. The new site is about half a mile from this existing site. The northeast corner of the site is occupied by the Waddles Boys and Girls Club. And this structure was thoroughly renovated in 2000. The applicant has also indicated no intention to relocate the Boys and Girls Club. Here are some photos of the Boys and Girls Club. The portion of the site which the applicant has indicated they intend to redevelop is shown in green. And the yellow area indicates the area of the site devoted to the Boys and Girls Club. One benefit of the EX zoning for the Boys and Girls Club is that it causes that use to be allowed by right, rather than the zoning now, which makes it a conditional use. The area to the north and west of the site is primarily developed with single and multi-dwelling development. I-205 is located to the east of the site, and some key development in the vicinity includes a future light rail station, which is approximately 600 feet to the south of the site. An existing bicycle and pedestrian path runs adjacent to the east property line of the site. The Lentz Fire Station is located immediately southwest of the site, and some older storefront development associated with the Lentz Town Center is located to the south of the site. These photos are representative of some of the development in the Lentz Town Center. Structures are primarily two-story storefront buildings with an upper floor of either residential or accessory use or storage. Overall, the buildings in the area are somewhat underutilized and some are in need of some restoration. Some newer development is also located in the town center, and the photo in the lower left is a newer building which is located just south of the site.
With a great restroom.
Oh, yeah? Nice. As previously mentioned, the surrounding vicinity to the north and the west is developed with single-dwelling, duplex, or low-density multi-dwelling development. The hearings officer has recommended approval of the land use request, and the next two slides highlight some of the key findings associated with that recommendation. First is that the EXD zoning allows for a broader range of uses, which include commercial, office, industrial, and residential development. And this will complement the Lentz Town Center and contribute to employment growth. The proximity of the site to transportation amenities, including the upcoming light rail, the pedestrian path, and frequent bus service on Southeast Herald and Southeast Foster Road, increases the potential for transit-oriented development and increased use of multimodal travel options. The D overlay, which accompanies the EX zoning, increases design overlay for eventual development, and development on the site would require approval through a discretionary design review or, in some cases, meeting the community design standards in the Portland Zoning Code. Continuing with the key findings, the proposal on balance equally or better supports the comprehensive plan goals and policies. The traffic report and addendum prepared by the applicant recommended improvements to the intersection at Southeast 92nd and Herald. As these improvements only involve the applicant site, PDOT determined that they can take place at the time of development. There's also a criterion which states that if a site changes from residential zone to a zone where residential development is not required, the applicant must show how the potential number of housing units are accommodated, and the applicant has provided a recorded covenant which shows that 93 units, which is the number of units, which the minimum number of units which would have been required with the R2 zoning, have been built on a commercially zoned site, and those units will be preserved for up to 425 years. And finally, Bureau responses showed that public services are adequate or have the potential to be improved in order to support the increased development possible on the site.
Could we go back to what you just mentioned about no net loss?
Yeah.
Go back on your PowerPoint for a second, just to go one slide. So would you explain that again? I apologize, I didn't follow it.
Basically what the criterion says is, hey, X number of housing units would have been required to be built on the site with the R2 zoning, where are those housing units going to go? And what the applicant's required to show is an equal or greater number of housing units having been built on a commercial or employment zone site where housing units aren't required to be built. So basically you're replacing the lost housing units or the potentially lost housing units somewhere else and then creating a covenant which states that they'll remain as residential units for 25 years.
So the applicant owns another piece of property where this covenant attaches?
Exactly. It's in Southwest Portland.
I see. So the no net loss policy does not require replacement within any particular geographic area. It's citywide?
Exactly.
And then there's a covenant that attaches to give us the certainty that for a period of time it's preserved.
Exactly. If I could maybe just expand on that a little bit, this criterion was actually met in two ways by the applicant, and the other way that it was met is PDC showed a list of housing developments which it's been involved in over the last 5 years where housing's been built in commercial on commercially zoned properties, and so we were able to, in effect, show that PDC is commonly involved in development which builds residential units on commercially zoned property. In effect, it established its demonstrates that, it, in a way, it has its own mini housing pool to draw from for units or for to meet this criterion.
Okay, thank you. I, at some point after this hearing, I'm going to ask for a little more time on this because I want to understand it in greater detail. This is one of the first times during my tenure that we've addressed this particular provision. I'm as the housing commissioner, I'm aware that I need to know a little bit more about this, and so I'll come back to you.
And actually, since I was on the planning commission, this known that loss criterion has been challenging in its interpretation and whether we need.
Since I was on the planning commission, which I ended my term on 2003, there's been discussion about the known that loss policy, how it's implemented. So it might be one of those bigger things that you will want to look into further.
Okay. Thank you.
The hearings officer's recommendation is to approve the comprehensive plan map amendment to change the designation of the site from residential 2000 to central employment. In addition, the hearings officer recommends approval of the zoning map amendment to change the zoning of the site from R2A, residential 2000 with an alternative design density overlay, to EXD, central employment with a design overlay. The two conditions included as part of this report both have to do with capping the amount of development which can occur on the site so that the intensity of development does not exceed the capacity of the surrounding transportation system. And this concludes my presentation. Also, please note that Bob Haley of the Bureau of Transportation is available to answer questions about the transportation system and the condition regarding the development limitation.
And I do have some questions about that.
Do you want to do that now or later?
If Mr. Haley could come up, that would be helpful.
Mr. Haley?
I'm a little concerned about putting conditions of approval on a comprehensive plan map amendment because it becomes difficult for applicants in the future, 50 years down the line, to know whether that there actually was a condition attached to it. And I'm wondering if there are other mechanisms that were explored to implement. I understand it was the Oregon Department of Transportation's concerns about the traffic from this site.
Well, I agree with you. I think our goal when we look at changing the comprehensive plan and placing a new zone with new uses is that we'd like to get to the point where we can make those findings that are required that the transportation system can adequately handle the new uses and the growth that goes with it. The challenging part is we look 20 years out, and when you add in background growth, what we've found, especially in zones like the EX, which is our most wide open zone, if we were going from R2 to R3, the chances are we probably could have just made a straight zone change. But the EX allows such a huge potential of development that it's been our experience in the last few years that these types of even a zone change in conformance with the comp plan, we've ended up having to place conditions. So what happens when the applicant comes in on these is because we know that our transportation system is constrained, and when you're looking 20 years out, even when you plan some penciling in all the things that have been at least budgeted for, half of the time the background growth itself is enough to show up as problems or certain intersections. So to meet the criteria, the only thing we do is we say, well, plug in all the numbers for your reasonable worst case scenario of full build out, and then see what breaks. And then you just keep backing down from that until the system continues to work. So this wasn't really a requirement of ODOT. I think they just agreed with the traffic study. The intersection that breaks is right here at the site, is 92nd and Herald. And they're going to be required to dedicate and put in a northbound right turn lane from 92nd onto Herald. That will bring, in the projection of 20 years out, will bring Herald to a D, which is our minimum that we can accept. So now we're there, and how many trips? Well, 250 additional would break it on top of the 60 that would be allowed under the R2. So we ended up with a cap of 310. So you're right. This does, it's not the best. We don't like to have it go with it's actually a condition of the zone map amendment. The comp plan you can make the findings for because it's an on balance, but the zoning map amendment says you must have adequate transportation facilities.
Okay. Would the Portland Department of Transportation not have authority to say you're breaking this intersection, you have to fix it, or not have this amount of density at without this condition?
Once it's zoned EX and it's an allowed use, no.
Even with the deed, that has to go through a design review?
The design review does not have any transportation-related approval criteria. Those are generally found in conditional uses and subdivisions.
Since this isn't a planned, is it in a Lentz plan district? Mm-mm. There isn't a plan district.
There isn't a plan district.
Transportation, the Bureau of Transportation, when we get projects that come in that meet the code, regardless of how big they are, we're really limited to looking at just the safety of how they enter and exit the site. You know, studies for queuing at parking garages and.
We have a minimum and a maximum parking, though, right?
Yes. And there's no parking required on this site because of their close proximity to good transit.
So how, I'm not clear about how the expected trip generation, since no parking is required, how would you figure that out and then say that, no, you can't have that much development?
Well, you use the ITE journal, so there's a nationally accepted number of trips per type of land use, and there's a table that identifies those in the condition of approval, and it's an extra step of review because whenever a building permit comes in for this site, they'll see there's a land use history. The plan checkers and the planning and zoning staff will have, there's a requirement that the applicant place their use and use that table and say, here's how many trips. And every time they come in, we keep a running total for that one property.
Okay, so I just have one further question. That is then how do they, the planners, the permit reviewers, always go back to the comprehensive plan change and figure out?
They go back to the conditions of approval of the zone map amendment. It would show up as this site has a history of land use action, just like it would be a conditional use if it came in for changes. It's almost, it rises to that level of it has a history of specific conditions to that site. Like I said, obviously the goal would be to have it unencumbered, to just meet it, but.
Were there other mechanisms considered other than this condition to be for PDOT to be able to say we need you to do intersection improvements?
Not to my knowledge, and meet the criteria for adequate services as defined by Title 17. We are at PDOT. Kurt may talk to it. I don't know if I want to drag him up here, but there's a we're looking at trying to change the standard that we have. Right now, we have a difference between us and ODOT, and I won't take too long. Ours is an absolute. You hit a level of D or lower in a signalized intersection, one trip over, it's broken. We can't approve you. Whereas on the states, theirs is a volume capacity, but it's relative. They can basically say, okay, it's broken, just don't make it any worse. So that may have led to us being able to not have a condition, but that's in the works within the Bureau of Transportation now, is to revise our level of service standards. Sorry for that. And welcome. It's good to see you.
We're glad you're as trained as you are.
Actually, you just said that
I feel
it
like
does,
I'm going to get some college credit for this. for those of you tuning in, this is not BCC for credit. This is the City Council.
Exactly.
And back to it.
But what I thought you just said was that if it goes one car over level D or under level D, you can require it to be fixed.
Only when we find that out through a review that has adequacy of services as an approval criteria, not for permitted uses outright.
We need to fix that. Within the city, we want intersections fixed a lot concurrently with development.
There would be, okay. I shiver to think how many developments we would be rejecting.
No, we would just require the improvements to be made concurrently, which you have done, the council has done in the past,
in this,
requiring
yeah.
traffic lights.
In this case, we're fortunate that the fix is adjacent to this applicant's site. The hard part is when we find an intersection that needs to be repaired that's two blocks away and we need right-of-way for it, we'd have to go and condemn it.
We would be, and most of what's come over my desk has been the latter.
Right.
So under the current scenario, we just say we can't refuse you, go ahead and make the situation worse?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We also run into proportionality issues if it's only two trips over and they're only adding 5% to it and we're making them fix the whole thing. So a whole other host of issues. This one is the one that works for now.
And help me remember the how much local control do we have over this sort of general issue area, and how much of it is based on state direction? I think these issues are fascinating, so I'm glad you're asking.
Our code right now requires us under comprehensive plan map, when we change a zoning amendment and some other things, legislative changes, is to make state transportation planning rule findings. So that is triggered in this type of review. And those, if you ever read those, the rules and the criteria, you can see ODOT's fingers all over them.
I want our newest commissioner to have a little bit more of this discussion. Our local ability to go outside, obviously, of the state rules would require us to go to the state legislature.
Right.
But Kurt, why don't you talk about that?
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Mayor Adams, Kurt Kruger for the Office of Transportation. And I know we can't cover everything we need to, so Commissioner Fritz, I'd be happy to address you, answer questions outside of this, as well as Commissioner Fish on these issues. They're a little bit complex, as you've seen. The state, since they haven't weighed in a lot on this particular one, gives us a lot of flexibility. We have the ability to set our own thresholds of level of service and how poorly or adequately we want an intersection to operate. And that's a policy decision that we're going to make here at the city. As long as it's not impacting a state facility, we have a lot of discretion over the standards that we've set. For example, we've set level of service D and level of service E as an acceptable standard, and there are a certain amount of delays that you would experience at an intersection that would define those. A city like the City of Los Angeles, with a much different traffic scenario, they've actually got levels of service F and F1 and F2, I believe, that are acceptable to them. We haven't gone there at that point. But as we have more infill occurring and constrained rights-of-way and constrained systems, we may be charged to look at where do we want to go. Do we add more transit and other options and allow the system to break, which encourages that use, or do we want to continue to overbuild and add more capacity? So in this specific example, we're putting conditions on that we have empirical data that says we expect this amount of traffic to be generated by this kind of development, but in reality we're also looking at 20 years out worth of guesstimates of data. So we're guessing and speculating, but we can't guarantee we're going to get down to 1 or 1.2 cars are going to be in the system 20 years from now that will break it.
I think my value choice here is that this condition limits the amount of development. And it seems to me that what we want to be doing is requiring further improvements. This is in a town center on light rail, exactly where we want as much development as possible, practicable, so that the condition seems to say, no, you can't do it because otherwise you'll break our road system. What we actually want is to say, if you want to do this development, you have to provide further transportation improvements.
That's a very good point, and I think the applicants may actually speak to this a little better than staff may, but I'm going to speculate just for a moment that this allows a development to be marketable. There's a certain allowance with the zone change that says you can come in and build a certain amount here with an outright allowance of traffic. If you want to go back above that, you might have to come back in for a modification or an adjustment to this approval, but you're not able to do that until you come in with a specific development or proposal. So that's where we're challenged, since we don't have something specific and concrete on this particular case. We have to put some caps in place, and we can look at that differently when they come in with whatever they propose to develop in the future.
The positive thing about this one is the cap is relatively high. Most of the times we're running into a 70 to 100 trip cap. This one has 310. So if you'd even looked at the table of office, this they could come in with this, what you think is a very limiting condition, and build over 300,000 square foot office building on this site and still be okay.
Amending a condition of approval of a comprehensive plan map amendment is a lot more difficult than an adjustment process or any other kind of more straightforward standards based. So we'll have more testimony.
What we're hoping, I think, is that the condition is placed on the zone map amendment, which means amending it would, I believe, be able to just go through a hearings officer level review and not have to come back to the council. Just as you would if you were changing a map in conformance with the comprehensive plan.
I think you need to say that again.
It says these approvals, plural, are subject to this condition. So it seems to me it would have to go back to a comprehensive plan amendment to change that.
Did you have more questions?
No, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll now hear from the appellant.
No, yeah.
Sorry.
It's not an appeal, it's a complaint. It comes here.
We'll now hear from the applicant.
Good afternoon, Commissioners and Mayor Adams. My name is Jennifer Hughes. I'm actually here in place of Lauren Golden. We've worked together on this process throughout the working with PDC. And first, I actually wanted to just thank the city staff for the cooperation and advice and help that they've given us throughout the process. Both BDS and PDOT have both been great to work with in this application. And Matt did a really thorough presentation for you about what we're proposing and what the actual approval is that's before you today. So I'm not going to reiterate all of that, but I just wanted to highlight a couple of the main points of the strengths of the application as we see them. It's currently a very underused site for where it is within the heart of the Lentz Town Center. Has a lot of potential for increased both density and mixed-use type development. And it would be an extension of the existing zoning in the town center. EX is the zone that's directly south of it, so it's a natural extension to make of that zone. And then also the direct proximity to the new light rail and the bus lines and all the transit access that's available there. And he talked about the increased potential from 93 maximum residential units to potentially up to 400, but then with the trip cap, that limits that we've just been discussing. And how we're meeting the transportation capacity is what we were just talking about, how the trip cap was developed, that we would be applying a matrix to any future development that PDC would choose to bring in for actual development and would go through that condition of approval and have to meet 310 trips. And then the no net loss of housing we've talked about a little bit already, too, and that there's the covenant that's already in place on one of PDC's developments already. So we have no opposition to the conditions of approval and are happy with the decision as recommended by the hearings officer.
And as I recall, this is very much a part of the discussion the Lentz Urban Renewal Advisory Committee is having. So what ends up happening here is going to be very much reflective of what the Lentz community envisions.
Mm-hmm. I think Justin's probably better.
I can touch on that a little bit. Justin Douglas, PDC project manager. I know that you're used to seeing me on Gateway-related topics, but I was having nightly dreams about Gateway, so my supervisor thought it best that I work on at least one other project.
That's deeply disturbing.
Yes, I know.
Borders on too much information.
On the outreach, I wanted to talk a little bit on the outreach and also what next steps are, because I'm sure you're curious about that. We had a 10-member Citizens Advisory Committee that met over the course of about 6 to 8 months to talk about the implications of a zone change.
Separate from the UREC?
That's right. It was there were UREC members on that committee. We also briefed the UREC several times on this, and they voted to support, drafted a letter in support of the zone change. The Lentz Neighborhood Association Board also voted to support the zone change. So we think that the community is in support of this and would like to see some mixed-use development, particularly with the new facilities that the Little League are going to be moving to. This is going to be a terrific site. So on that note, the next steps are that we are in the process of drafting a request for qualifications. We're trying to move away from requests for proposals on sites like this where there's such an open development template, and instead draft a request for qualifications that would rather focus on a development team's capability, experience, and their commitment to seeing a vision like this through to reality.
Maybe you help me with that nuanced difference between a request for qualifications versus a request for proposal. What is it that would provide us in terms of helping us decide who we would select to actually do a development that an RFP would not?
Well, typically with RFPs, applicants or submitters are asked to provide a development program, pro formas, cost estimates, detailed drawings. The Burnside Bridgehead is a good example of a RFP process where when the project in the RFP is submitted to the point at which that development actually is in the ground, it looks completely different. So people's expectations from what was submitted and the drawings that they see are often wildly divergent from what ultimately is built. The request for qualifications, what our thought would be, would be to look for a qualified team, somebody that understands the neighborhood and is willing to work with stakeholders and that has done projects like this before, that appreciates transit-oriented development, that has experience either themselves or with other partners on doing mixed-use projects, mixed-income projects. And what we would like to do is select a team from the RFQ process and then work with them over the course of 2009 to do their programming work, to talk to members of the community about what they would like to see on this site. So in back to your question, particularly given the current economic climate, we don't want to try to force the selected developer to come up with a financing plan within the next 3 or 4 months because it's going to be very difficult to do that.
So do we lose some competitiveness in terms of not having an RFP then? I mean, if you're doing an RFQ, are you selecting then that person to actually ultimately do the development as well? And if you are, that strikes me as a little, I just need to understand why we would do that because it seems then you wouldn't have the advantage of having people sharpen their pencils when they submit a proposal.
The RFQs are actually seen as much more favorable by members of the development community for the exact reason that they're not being asked to come up with a specific proposal, but rather they're saying, you know, we've done similar projects like this. You know, we don't want to spend all the time to hire an architect and do drawings and then be judged on that, but rather on our capability and our experience.
That's really gets to the nature of my question because I'm wondering if we lose some competitiveness because of that. I would expect to have happen what you're saying, that they would like that better because they don't have to sharpen their pencils, but rather are qualified. Are we trading off a higher quality product for maybe a more efficient project? And I'm not necessarily passing judgment. I'm just trying to understand the term, and it's not something I'm familiar with.
One thing, we've been involved with both. I've been involved with both over the years. The Bridgehead is a good example of a RFP project absolutely falling apart.
Right.
Just didn't work. RFQs make sense to me on projects where we can get a lot of competitive information, where we know the square foot cost of comparable buildings being built. The end product is we have to assure ourselves and decision makers that we're getting a competitive price, a good price.
How do you do that?
By looking at the competitive cost of building per square foot, very similar buildings across the city.
So you, in fact, don't get competing bids.
Correct.
You do, okay.
But you go out and you make sure that the amount you're buying per square foot for a particular type of house with the kind or particular unit with the kind of amenities is equal to or better than what somebody else comparable unit is built somewhere else in the city, hopefully in the neighborhood.
I want to be educated as well. What I hear is that in a down economy where it's unlikely that, given the credit markets and some other conditions
no one will reply.
That anything's going to move forward. The difference is that if you ask for an RFP, people will sharpen their pencil and give you a proposal, which, as in Burnside Bridgehead, may never be built. If you do an RFQ, to Randy's point, you may lose a little bit of that competitive advantage at the front end, but you might get the flexibility to then adapt to the circumstances with someone who has the capacity to do it, subject to having some way of monitoring that you're getting, to Sam's point, that you have, that you're not now, in the name of flexibility, getting jammed on price. But that still may not answer your concerns, Commissioner.
I don't know that it is a concern. I mean, I appreciate the explanation. That helps me understand better. But on another project I'm working on, it was recommended that we do an RFQ over an RFP, and I unfortunately didn't ask to have the distinction explained. And the second time I've heard it in the last week, and I was just curious.
On the fully publicly financed projects, oftentimes the RFP is the best way to go, where we have all the money, and in the end we own it.
Okay. The difference here being the private sector is going to build it.
They're going to bring money to the table as well.
So can I ask two related questions? One is, as the new Parks Commissioner,
but it depends.
I'm interested in how, in fact, we're moving the field from this location to the park, and who's paying for it?
We negotiated a relocation agreement with the Lentz Little League. They are an institution in that neighborhood, and they've played on this site for 40, maybe 50 years. I mean, they've been there for a long time. The fields and the backstops need some work.
Right.
So we negotiated a relocation agreement with the Little League. And I don't know all the details on the financing, but I do know that PDC contributed towards the costs for the Parks Bureau to bid out work for the new facilities in Lentz Park.
It was my understanding that PDC actually paid for the entire cost.
It was at the entire, yeah.
So I'm just interested in how that's moving forward. And the other piece I wanted to ask you is, I mean, this is a prime piece of dirt. And when we looked at the slide that shows its proximity to the new light rail station, for example, and other things, I mean, this is exactly what the city wants to encourage development, locations like this that are within walking distance to mass transit. But we also have, in this particular urban renewal district, we have some affordable housing goals, which we have been having some challenge getting to. And we have a community that has a variety of opinions about what kind of housing they want. There are those who would prefer to have the home ownership opportunities, others who recognize that for lower-income citizens, there's a shortage. So how will our decision about the development here be influenced by the guidelines established in the Urban Renewal District about affordable housing?
The way that we have framed these discussions or these topics in the request for qualifications are that the zoning on this site, should it be approved, would allow for a mixed-use project. It would still allow for a residential project and would allow for solely employment project. We have noted that through market studies that we've done and through what we've heard from the community that most folks support mixed-income, mixed-use project. The zone change would allow for, if there were an employer who was attracted to the site, that would be an allowed use. I'm not trying to skirt around your question. More to your point about the affordable housing, you're right. We have had some difficulties in spending the set-aside dollars in Lentz. At this point, it's really hard to say, not knowing what the programming of a future use on this site would be. I will say that we do have set-aside dollars in a project like this. If an applicant were to request them to support some affordable housing goals, it would be a natural.
So does anything that we're being asked to do today bind our hands in any way about in terms of that conversation?
No.
Because, by the way, that when we talk about affordable housing, which you'll hear, I think, a constant refrain of this council is affordable is a relative term. Putting in affordable homes here to a range that meets the median income of this neighborhood is in effect meeting an affordable housing component. Just as putting an assisted care facility for older adults where there's a need or any number of things. So I think we're going to end up taking a somewhat more expansive view about what is affordable and looking at the neighborhood demographics and needs. But I wanted to put this marker down because when we just recently reviewed the 30% set-aside TIF report, there's a number of URAs where we're having challenges. This is one. And I know there is a robust debate going on about what the community would like to see. And I'd hate to lose an opportunity like this at a site that is as prominent. If there is to be housing, I'd hate to lose an opportunity to do a mixed income development that actually had some affordable housing component.
So was in the Citizen Committee, was there any concern about the amount of development that could be allowed?
There was. This site is really the transition zone from the historic town center to a pretty low-density post-war single-family home neighborhood. So in some ways, the trip cap, I think, allayed some concerns about the size and the bulk of something that could go on the site. So that allows, I think it'll allow for development that's more respective of the neighborhood fabric. But there are certainly concerns about that. And there are other folks who just are sad to see the Little League go, so. Yeah.
So if, in fact, this does result in a development cap or limitation, that would be something that the community would appreciate?
I think so. I mean, I can't speak. We have a community member here today who could speak to those. I think this is a 3.5-acre site, so I think intuitively people think, wow, that's a really big building. And, of course, it wouldn't be one building. But So there are some concerns about bulk. There are also concerns about just impacts on the road network. So I think in some ways that the trip cap does alleviate some concerns about something that doesn't fit in the neighborhood.
Were there any discussion about limiting height or floor area ratio or any of the other standards we could use to limit?
The height limit in the EX zone is relatively modest. It's 65 feet, I believe, which is not. We looked at some other zoning classifications that were much taller and probably even more out of scale with the neighborhood. I think 65 feet, you know, five or six stories is something that it would be considerable, but it wouldn't be, 10 stories as some other high-density residential zones. Thank
you. Anything else? All right.
Thank you both.
We now have supporters of the applicant.
We have one more person signed up, David Hyde.
Hi, David. Welcome to City Council. Just give us your name and you'll have 3 minutes.
My name is David Hyde. I am representing the Lentz Neighborhood Association. I currently hold the land use chair position, and I also was part of the Citizens Advisory Committee on Justin's preliminary meetings. The Lentz Neighborhood Association has supported this rezoning, and the main reason that it allows commercial development on the property. The EXD currently includes all of the older Lentz Town Center. This would be a continuation of that, and we see that as important in developing that entire block. The new zoning allows for a higher density and allows for housing. We feel this is an easier way to meet our affordable housing requirements by having a higher density, and maybe this project wouldn't have to be entirely affordable housing and more likely be a mixed use. The Lentz neighborhood has felt burdened by the demands for the affordable housing. I think there are people in Lentz who feel that all of Lentz is affordable housing. And so the higher density would allow us to meet that requirement maybe with less impact. We also support the higher density because it brings forth the PDOT restrictions and conditions that if the higher density wasn't there, wouldn't be applied to 92nd and Herald intersection. And so those conditions are also things that we support as a neighborhood. And if the density wasn't increased, it wouldn't be so likely that those improvements would happen. And I think that basically sums up the Neighborhood Association. I believe there was a letter that was provided prior to my being on the association that should be available that supports this development and zoning also.
Well, sir, if I could, Mayor, I want to thank you for coming and testifying and recognizing in your testimony that when we put density where it is appropriate, it has the effect of both meeting our overall planning goals for the city and region, but it frankly takes a little bit of the pressure off of some of our traditional R5 neighborhoods where people would like to see, you know, the single family 5,000 square foot lot residential areas be protected as much as possible in parts of our city. So I appreciate your acknowledgement of that principle. And on the question of how you do a mixed use development with an affordable component, reflecting on the fact that this is 3.5 acres, we are currently helping to design a build out in Southwest Portland at the Jerome Sears site. And if we get the green light from the federal government, we'll be moving forward on that. And after extensive consultation with the neighborhood, what we've come up with conceptually is a plan that blends home ownership with host coming in and building homes for sale. It would price at about $180,000 to $225,000. a facility that was largely focused on older adults, and then some affordable housing for people who are formerly homeless, mixed in into a community with some open space and other benefits. So we do have a lot of experience blending. And I think with the home ownership piece and an affordable component on a site with density, you know, we do have quite a lot of we have a pretty good track record of working with private developers to make that happen. So if that is the path down the road that someone chooses, I think we can the city can help ensure that this is an amenity for the neighborhood.
Yeah. I think a dream of the site would be the Sitka meets Belmont Dairy sort of project. You know, whether the current financial climate would allow something like that remains to be seen, but you know.
Well, and I will tell you when you say Sitka and you say Belmont Dairy, you should know that you probably have no greater champion on this council than the mayor in terms of the notion of family-friendly housing in areas, particularly within walking distance to schools. And so we recently took up this issue in the River District rezoning, where we use the zoning code to create incentives for three-bedroom housing at about 1,100 square feet, family-friendly. Sitka is an example of an attempt to be more family-friendly. Belmont Dairy is probably, I'm just not sure about the scale. Those units now, because of the market, because of that area, have become rather pricey. But I get the drift. And there's an example of a grocery store, some commercial, townhomes, and rentals all in a complex, which is very attractive. And frankly, it's probably helped jumpstart the development in Belmont.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question, Mr. Hyde. Thank you for coming downtown and the weekday. I appreciate that very much. Do you think the neighborhood would be concerned about more units on this site? You mentioned that you're willing to have the increased density in order to get the traffic improvements. Do you want the traffic improvements to also have the effect of limiting the amount of construction of development that could happen on this site?
We acknowledge that the site should have higher density, and again, it allows us to meet our affordable housing requirements easier that way. As for your question about the limitations on the
let me rephrase it. Supposing we were to change the condition of approval to just say you can do the amount of development that an EX zone would normally allow, and then as much development as you have to do the traffic improvements that make it work. Would that be acceptable to the neighborhood, or was part of the discussion in putting these trip limitations on it that we don't actually want quite as many units as an EX zone would currently allow?
No, I think the neighborhood feels that there's already a need for improvements to the roads there.
So does it matter if we add, as long as you get those improvements, does it matter if we add 100 units, 200 units, 300 units?
Well, as far as the my personal feeling on the trip calculations are, I think someone testified that they were using national formula. And I think Portland may be able to, you know, reduce those trip calculations on a high density, because Portland does development differently than, say, Atlanta or Houston. You know, so I think we're not terribly concerned with that.
So you wouldn't mind if there were an extra, if we got as much development on this site as possible under the EX zone, as long as the transportation improvements were provided? Is that
correct.
What you're saying?
Yeah, that's correct.
Thank you.
And especially since it's nearly on top of the MAX station.
Yeah.
That would have to be a broader discussion, I will tell you,
yep.
At the community, with the community.
Okay.
I've been involved in some of these discussions, and we do not want to be making a judgment that has not been thoroughly vetted. And I'm sure those of you that have worked out in Lentz would agree. We have a good balance now that we have achieved through years of hard work and laborious public processes, and I would not want to do anything to disrupt that.
So are we ready? Thank you very much for your eloquent testimony. Is anyone else signed up as a supporter of the applicant?
No one else signed up.
Anyone else in the room? All right. Then we move to...
Mayor, I would move to adopt the recommendations.
Is there a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded to adopt the recommendations. Is there any discussion on council?
Well, I am concerned about limiting developments on this site. It seems to me we want... I take your point well made, Commissioner Leonard, that we want to discuss with our community partners, but it sounded like from the testimony that the community's concern is getting the traffic improvements. And I'm wondering if there's an opportunity. This is such a key site that I guess maybe I'd like to hear from staff whether a short delay to reopen that. Philosophically, I'm also concerned about putting a condition of approval on a comprehensive map. On a comprehensive plan change. The whole point of a comprehensive plan change is that we agree on balance, this is the better zone, and we do it. We don't say if and only if you do such and such. So that's a struggle for me.
Justin, do you have thoughts regarding that?
I guess my thoughts on this would be that three issues that are of crucial importance to folks in Lentz are traffic, density, and affordable housing. And I feel that the zone change that we're applying for here and the associated, and the trip cap and what that, its implications, that we've been able to strike a relatively delicate balance with the concerns of the folks in the community about not overburdening the local street network, about having development on a site that would transition well from the town center to a neighborhood that's lower in density. And I think that folks also appreciate that there are other sites closer to the town center, closer to Foster Road, to the MAX station, that have just as much potential that as this site. They may be not as large, but this is would really be one of the first projects out of the box, like the Assurity Northwest project, that will change the face of Lentz. I think that there may be potential in the future for higher density projects. I'm not sure if it...
You're talking about the new Copperpenny site. Is that what you're alluding to?
Right. New Copperpenny, right.
And if I could just give my thoughts.
I just have a question.
Well, I want to give my thoughts to your comment.
Yeah.
And that is, this has been very much sort of, to build on what Commissioner Leonard spoke to, this has very much been, we're in the midst of a trust building process with this neighborhood. And, as someone who wants as much density around, especially light rail stations as possible, I would love for there to be more density, but I will enthusiastically support this because the community has painfully but thoroughly come to sort of a weighing of a whole bunch of competing priorities for this site. And this site has a lot of emotional interest for folks. So if we do this one well, if we complete this process with the neighborhood well, I believe we will be in better place to do even to be able to sort of push the comfort zone, both sides, all sides, to sort of push their comfort zones. But I think if we push right now, it'll blow up in our face.
So my follow-up question is, for the EX zoned sites within the town center currently, do they have any kinds of conditions on them, or are they straight EX, EXD?
I don't believe that there are conditions like this one.
Okay, then I'm comfortable with what this is proposing.
So we have a motion.
All right.
And a second.
Any other council discussion?
Thank you.
Carla, please call the roll.
Fish?
Well, I'm pleased to support the recommendation, and I will say, for the benefit of both the staff that's here and the public that's here and watching, I have become accustomed over the past 6 months to expecting really first-quality, first-rate presentations on these quasi-judicial matters as they come before council. The staff work is consistently of a very high level. It's not easy to take these big things and reduce them to a PowerPoint that's understandable to all.